Fernanda, it's four, please.
Thank you. Well, on the way here, three of us travelling together in the car, Joyce and Julie and myself, were actually trying to work out between us what grace was exactly. Although we can define it, it is actually rather difficult to define it. It's not a single quality. It's only not a commodity that we can pass from one to the other, but it is something to be shared. And I think it's something that we can't really understand properly until we've actually been received it ourselves. Can we? We can't really understand the theory just by learning about it. We have to experience it, I think. And I thought it would be good for us to think or take some words of the Apostle Peter, for surely amongst all the disciples of Jesus, Peter has a greater reason than most, perhaps, to be able to explain and to be able to be a leader of the early church in showing forth this grace, because certainly he had received it and he felt something about it. He felt gratitude, and I'm sure I'm not too sure of the linguistic connection between grace and gratitude, but I'm sure they're inextricably bound together. You can't really have grace and understand it without feeling gratitude, and therefore you have to have experienced it yourself. And surely Peter did. In a way, I think Peter was a disciple who I can relate to perhaps more easily than the others. Is it because in Peter we have a stark description of his failure? Perhaps more so than any of the other disciples. And we know that all the disciples at the crucial time when Jesus needed their support more than any other forsook him and fled. But of course Peter actively denied that he knew Jesus, and I think that amongst the terrible feeling of desolation that all the disciples must have felt during those 3 days when Jesus was in the tomb, I don't think any of them can really compare with the feeling that Peter must have had, having let his Lord down so badly. And yet, of course, Peter, soon after that incident, became the grateful recipient of forgiveness. For when Jesus spoke to him quietly after his resurrection and asked him if he loved him, and Peter said, "Well, you know I love you." And three times that question came, and it really made Peter really search the depths of his heart. And Jesus simply gave him an instruction: "Feed my sheep, feed my lambs, tend my sheep." And so it was that Peter came to, having received, having been so grateful for receiving forgiveness in his failure, that he then went on to follow Jesus literally in so many ways, including a time of great suffering, and indeed we understand that his very death followed the pattern of his Lord. And when we come to his letters, I think this really shows through that he remembered what the Lord had done. And although I think both he and his brother, of course, were in their first call by Jesus. Follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. And Peter was indeed a fisherman in more than one sense. Of course, we know that he literally, that was his living. But after taking on the responsibility that Jesus gave him, he truly became a fisher of men. Not only gathering them to the Lord, but also encouraging them at a particular time. I think these letters, we understand, were written when the Christians were beginning to suffer a very, very grievous persecution under Nero. And they were going through a time of persecution and great suffering. And I think this Peter has a particular relevance to those Christians who are enduring suffering, perhaps in ways that we don't really fully appreciate in this country. And I think a lot of things can be learned from Peter's writings. I just really want to take just a few of the occasions where he actually mentions grace, because he does mention it on a number of occasions, both in his first letter and his second letter. I think we've only got time to look really at the first letter and just briefly go through what he can tell us a bit about grace. Of course, it's maybe almost a standard salutation amongst the letters that the apostles wrote, Paul particularly, because he understood grace very well, didn't he? And Peter, when he writes to the exiles of the dispersion in Asia Minor, when he addresses them as those who have been chosen and destined by God the Father and sanctified by the Spirit to be obedient to Jesus Christ and to be sprinkled with his blood. And there, of course, we've got that idea of certainty that Duncan mentioned right at the start. And really it comes through, I think, very powerfully in the writings of Paul as well. But Peter is absolutely sure of the destiny that having been chosen and destined by God the Father and sanctified. So you've got those sort of three elements that we share in the hope that we have together, having been chosen and destined and sanctified by the Spirit to be obedient. And there is the challenge, isn't it? We can't avoid it. Obedience is part of our calling. May grace and peace be yours in abundance. And he mentions grace again in the 10th verse in respect of the salvation which the prophets were concerned about finding out about. The prophets who prophesied of the grace that was to be yours made careful search and inquiry, and the things that we have in the Old Testament then are actually all in tune with the things of the New. And there was that testifying in advance to the sufferings destined for Christ and the subsequent glory. And Peter seems always to link these two things together. When we have sufferings and endure persecution and the things that affect us because we belong to Christ, then the glory is an inevitable thing that follows, inevitable result. And then in verse 13, therefore prepare your minds for action, discipline yourselves, set all your hope on the grace that Jesus Christ will bring you when he is revealed. Now, that is clearly a future aspect of grace. Now, we've thought of a few things that relate to the grace in the present. We can look back and see what Christ has done in respect of forgiveness of sins, and that's a grace that has been bestowed in the past, a grace that we receive now. But there's also this grace that we look forward to, and so you have different different aspects of grace. There are so many facets to it. But it is, in every case, the undeserved favour of God that is being described here. There's quite a bit, we won't go into it now, but if we read through chapter 3, for example, we have Peter homing in on the difficulties that are part of our suffering. And in the context of this suffering, he says, "Do not fear what they fear. Do not be intimidated, but let your hearts sanctify Christ as Lord. Always be ready to make your defense to anyone who demands from you an accounting for the hope that is in you." And I think the hope that is in us is more convincing when we are convinced ourselves about it. And so easy, it's sometimes so easy for us to be in doubt, I think. And Peter is here ready to assure us and anxious to assure us that we have a hope and that it is very certain and very definite. And the theme of suffering continues in chapter 4 and connected with the experience of Christ himself. And Peter has this personal knowledge and memory of what his Lord went through. He saw it for himself. He knew what Jesus had gone through. "Since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same intention, for whoever has suffered in the flesh has finished with sin." There seems to be almost here an indication that he's talking about, you know, suffering that leads to death. And it has for some people. And we know that it was going to be that going to be so for Peter himself. He draws attention to his own coming death in his next letter, which we won't look at, but it's the certainty that he was going to follow the Lord Jesus even in his death. But it didn't stop him from giving witness to the wonderful things that have come through grace. In this fourth chapter, he mentions a particular use of grace, which I think is almost like the key verse, I think, in this letter. Like good stewards of the manifold grace of God, serve one another with whatever gift each of you has received. Now, there's two things, really. I think this phrase, manifold grace, I think, isn't it almost an understatement, really? The grace of God is seen in so many ways. We've considered some of them, haven't we, already? And no doubt there are more in the things, in the various ways in which God shows his love and his gifts to us. And of course, he's given each of us gifts. Separate gifts. You know, one person doesn't have the same gifts as another. And God, in his goodness, has distributed these various gifts to us. And and Peter exhorts us to, whatever our gift is, use it. Serve one another with whatever gift each of you has received. And I don't suppose, in fact, I'm pretty sure there is none of us here that has not received some gift or other that can be used in the service of others. Whoever speaks must do so as one speaking the very words of God. Whoever serves must do so with the strength that God supplies. So this is another aspect, really. The gifts that God has given to us are given to us for a purpose, to serve one another and to give praise to Him. But we must always remember that these various abilities, they're not our own. We didn't give them to ourselves. They were given to us by God, and therefore they should be used in His service. And then finally, let's go to chapter 5. And here Peter is giving some advice to elders. I was an elder myself and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as one who shares in the glory to be revealed. Just think what the meaning of, what that exactly implies, that Peter is sharing in the future glory. Now, that's something that we can all actually do if we are convinced that we will be there. One who shares, not who will share, but who shares in the glory to be revealed. And that really sort of shines through, I think, all the way through this letter. I exhort the elders among you to tend the flock of God that is in your charge. See, Peter himself has been doing this, but he's going to die. In fact, probably crucified very soon. And he is encouraging the flock of Christ that he has been tending and feeding, and he's encouraging them to do the same. Not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you do it. Not for sordid gain, but eagerly. Do not lord it over those in your charge, but be examples of the flock. And this is where I think we need to be very careful about what expectations we have of others, and what obligations we lay on the shoulders of others. Because we're called not to be lords over the flock, but examples to the flock. So the standards that we insist on should be the standards that we live by, and not necessarily expect others, because these are standards that grow, and the Lord is patient with our growth. But when the chief shepherd appears, you will win the crown of glory that never fades away. And he follows this sort of assurance with an emphasis on being humble. All of you must clothe yourselves with humility in your dealings with one another, for God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. So this is a characteristic that we need to really work at in order to really receive God's grace. Humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. So there will be a time when the promises that he has made will receive, and the exaltation will come, the glory that follows the suffering. And of course the suffering is a necessary part of our preparation, and in that suffering we're bound to have anxieties, and we're bound to have cares, we're bound to have worries. And what should we do with those anxieties and worries and cares? Well, cast them all on the Lord. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. And that's a wonderful assurance that Peter can pass on to us, because he experienced it himself. He goes on, like a roaring lion, your adversary, the devil, prowls around. The devil, I think, may be the... Sorry to reach that point, just this point. But it's... I was just going to say, I think the devil is possibly the opposite of humility, is pride. But I will just go very quickly to the final exhortation that Peter says, and having spoken to us and giving us this letter specifically to help us to understand grace, to testify, this short letter I've written to you to encourage you to testify that this is the true grace of God. Stand fast in it.